You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, November 13th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. I'm wearing a t-shirt, but I did manage to throw a flannel with a collar over it. Nothing below the belt. Well, underwear. I'm not going to... would be inappropriate to come in completely nude. And my snuggle socks. The big, no shoes. Just the chamois socks that I wear on Fridays because it's casual Fridays. On today's program, like we do on every other casual Friday where we have been blessed, Cliff Schechter will be joining us. Also, too, right on the heels of cutting some video for us for an upcoming release, which we should play today, incidentally. Film guy Matthew will be joining us to ostensibly give me a streaming movie selection for me to watch over the weekend, which I will have no time to do because of the 14 school functions that I will be involved in. And the offer from my wife for a fun Saturday night of me painting the bathroom. But hope springs eternal, folks. Also on the program today, epic speech by Donald Trump. I know, ladies and gentlemen, you're like, what the F? Seriously? But I got to tell you, this... we've said this before, but I don't know if I've ever said this before. It's so insane now, ladies and gentlemen. He has gone off the deep end. I don't know if it's conscious or not conscious, or if it's just he's tired of running, but this coming out at a time where there is now reportedly deep, serious, existential fear by the GOP establishment, so much so that, yes, ladies and gentlemen, Mitt Romney could hop on one of those dressage horses of his wife and ride away from the sunset and towards us.
Tag, bag, hunter, sag, bag, whatever. All load my up. Children's names and sons. Gather
load up,
around.
Load up the car.
Load up the car. Here's what we're doing.
Cue Holiday Road, right?
We might actually be able to cut those black people's welfare programs after all.
Finally, America's coming back to its senses. They finally realize it was all about me. They need me. Ladies and gentlemen.
Beating a woman or a Jew, not quite as good as beating a Negro, but something. Let's get to it.
My God, if my last name was Rubio, I would have been named president 5 times in a row by now.
I would have re-amended the Constitution for me.
If only I was a lady. I don't know if any of you have heard already about this speech that Trump gave last night. I watched about 25 minutes of it last night at midnight. I should have been going to bed, but I was just transfixed. I have seen I've seen his speeches before. I've seen his stump speeches. There's been nothing like this. I mean, nothing like this, I think, in the history of American politics, at least since I've been alive. I mean, I don't think that there, and Matt, I mean, you are arguably as knowledgeable about recordings of presidents and historical figures, certainly of anybody that I know. Have you ever seen anything like this?
I think you could probably find some Spiro Agnew audio, but not anything approaching.
Close,
this.
But not quite. I mean, this doesn't fit into this, like, you know, nagging nabobs of and those punk kids at the colleges. This is the leader in the Republican polls, and not just the flash in the pan leader. I mean, we're close to the point where even if, like, Jeb Bush was to shoot into the lead tomorrow, this guy wouldn't even be in the lead for much longer than Trump has been until, like, you know, close to the convention. I mean, he's been in the lead of the polls now for, like, 5 months.
You know, Bill Scheer wrote a piece.
The John Kerry piece, yes.
And there were so many, and I guess just to explain for everybody, he said John Kerry was polling dismally. Less than a month, apparently, before the Iowa caucuses in 2004, and he bounced back and he won. The whole reason why that piece doesn't work, though, is that Kerry bounced back through appealing to this desire amongst Democrats to, we need to win at all costs. And somehow there was an electability argument that translated to Kerry getting the nomination. They don't want to make any compromise. Well, they don't want. The whole rationale that re-propelled Kerry is never going to work for Jeb Bush.
Well, I mean, you don't even have to go. You don't even have to presume that the intention is different for the voters, because the calculation, the reason why John Kerry could make that appeal was because it was 2004. And the country had gone completely insane in terms of on this warmonger posture. And so John Kerry had this, what at people at the time thought was an impeccable, unassailable, I should say, military record. And that was, what does Jeb, who could argue that Jeb is the most electable of all of them at this point? Because, frankly, the guy has proven that he can't even campaign himself out of a wet bag. I mean, the dynamic is fundamentally different. John Kerry did not live, basement dwell in those polls with $100 million war chest.
Right.
And run out of money.
Right.
I mean, that's the difference here, is that, yes, there have been people who have been in, you know, been in the basement dwelling of the polls and have come out of nowhere to win. I think even John McCain may have done that.
That's
In 2008. I'm not even without going back into the polls. I don't know. But I'm sorry. The analogy is, you know, it's also true that John Kerry had two legs, and there's a lot of other candidates who have two legs.
Biped analogy there.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. We got to take a quick break. And before we get to that, I think Cliff and I are going to talk about this unbelievable. Well, I don't know if it's unbelievable. Maybe too believable piece about how the Koch brothers made Joni Ernst and what it says for, I think, you know, we have yet to see the influence of this money. We're about to see the influence of past money. I will explain when we talk to Cliff Schechter. We're going to take a quick break. Just a reminder, folks, I know a lot of people tune in for Fridays only. We cannot do this show without your support. If a membership to support the program for, you know, what is really pennies a day is too much because you only tune in on a Friday, let's say, feel free to hit the donate button. And also, you know, obviously support places like justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Coupon code majority, get 10% off. Buy the majority blend. It is Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa time. is Eid has passed, right? Or is that coming up?
No, I think Eid is coming up. Ramadan has passed.
I don't know if you give, you probably don't give coffee for Eid, right? I mean, because it's caffeine.
Well,
it?
We don't really say what we do for Eid. Oh, remember? All right.
Yes. And, but nevertheless, good time to give coffee as a gift. And then you say, look, this, I don't want to sound like I'm cheap. That's why I got you 3 bags of coffee. But you can get 10% off with the coupon code MAJORITY. That's what you say. Maybe a little card. Maybe we should make up cards. I don't know. Maybe we should make up a printable card. I don't know why I was looking at Matt when I said that. Also, if you do buy crap on Amazon, if you do do that, the least you can do is use our link at majorityreportkickback.com. Click on the link. Bookmark it. Always buy your Amazon crap through there. If you buy crap from Amazon, we get a kickback. Not necessarily. I'm not encouraging you to buy stuff from Amazon, but I know people do it. So if you're gonna do it, here's a way where you can get just a little bit of guilt relief by giving us a little bit of kickback at majorityreportkickback.com. Quick break. We'll be right back with Cliff Schechter. We are back, ladies and gentlemen, Sam Seder on the Majority Report. It's Casual Friday, folks. And every Casual Friday, as you know, what I like to do is I like to sit back in my chair, pull up this this big hookah where we smoke tobacco. We just borrow it from the Turkish restaurant around the corner. It's on Fridays only. And I like to listen to this theme song.
Cliff Schechter. Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Cliff Schechter. Hello, Cliff, how are you?
I am doing well. How are you, Sammy?
Cliff, I, you know, as much as we talk about this, I really do think that I got to fill this imaginary hookah that I have here that I wheel in on Fridays from an imaginary Turkish restaurant with an imaginary brown hash to really get it in touch with what is good. This is crazy. Dude, it's crazy. Just the past 2 days. I mean, the story in the Washington Post that we're going to talk about from the Republican establishment, what Trump did last night, I've never seen anything like it in the context of really anything like a political campaign. I've never seen anything like that, I think, in front of people that wasn't a comedy show. I mean, I've certainly been involved in things like that, but they were supposed to be comedic.
So what's interesting is you weren't running for president when you were doing that.
No, no, not for reals. And I certainly wasn't the number one candidate in the polls for any party. Before we get to that, because this is sort of the, I mean, in some respects, this is not a different story. And in many respects, it's the same story. It's a little bit more terrifying. I mean, what we're watching on the electoral side right now, for the most part, is, in my mind, quite fun and going to lead to, hopefully, good things for us. Although we will get to that part where a Republican consultant expresses a sort of a deep, dark fear that many people have, I think. But before we get there, let's talk about this Koch brothers piece. It was in Politico, written by Ken Vogel. We've had Vogel on this show. He's one of these guys who at Politico who really just digs into the funding of
He writes a lot about money and politics. And, you know, he doesn't, at least from my seeing his work, is actually a really good reporter who doesn't seem to have some of the biases that can be evident here in their Politico and really just tries to do his job.
Right.
So I like his writing.
It's very much, I mean, he writes very much about the process. And you know, there's also a piece today about how apparently the Democracy Alliance is contemplating giving money to Black Lives Matter. That seems a little bit weird to me, but nevertheless.
I'd like to be at that meeting, nonetheless.
Yeah, it would be interesting. But this story is a story of not of contemplation, but rather of reflection. And that's a big part of this. I mean, you know, when Citizens United came down, Anthony Kennedy famously said that he didn't think this would be corruptive and that there would be transparency, that everybody would know.
Those words need to be put on his grave, seriously, because I don't think, I mean, you know, Kennedy, obviously, gay marriage, he's done some good things here and there. The totality of his record has been terrible and destructive. Here and there, he's, you know, on abortion rights, basically, not everything, but basically, and on gay marriage and probably a few other things I'm not thinking of, he's been okay. But, I mean, my God, has anybody ever said something that's proven to not be true any quicker than that was?
And I think he recently conceded that, at least partially. He said it doesn't seem to be working the way it's supposed to. And this is
understatement of the century.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, because this is a story about how Joni Ernst rocketed through the top of her Republican primary in Iowa. And everybody remembers Joni Ernst. She's now a sitting senator from the state of Iowa. She was the one who was talking about castrating pigs, I think it was, if I remember correctly.
That was her famous commercial, yes.
And this story is about how it, unbeknownst to anyone at this point, and only known to people today through this piece, because of an imminent IRS filing. Remember now, this is from money expended a year and a half ago. So the idea of transparency as to who's funding Joni Ernst, we find out not during her primary, not during her general, but well after she's been elected to office. And it turns out it's the Koch brothers, you know, that they poured in a tremendous amount of money.
Yeah, well, from the piece, what it makes clear is, and it's not even just the money, although of course that's a big part of it. It's the fact that they basically are going to these states. I mean, all these states being taken over in 2010 and even 2014, you know, so many states being taken over by right-wing legislatures and, so, you know, sometimes by people seemingly out of nowhere. So we knew some of this was going on, obviously. We knew people that a lot of these right-wing groups have gotten involved in the local level. They can get much more bang for their buck that way. But, you know, they were looking to the sort of the ground level of finding somebody. And Ernst was I forget if she was a state senator or state rep, but one or the other.
State senator.
State senator, thank you. And they saw her there, and she had zero support. She had, you know, apparently had pontificated openly about maybe running, but wasn't even necessarily going to run for that U.S. Senate seat. She'd said something about it. And these guys, basically went in, they looked at her, they watched her speak, and they saw that she had kind of that folksy charisma that appeals to their people on the right particularly, and that she had, her background being in the military and everything would be hugely helpful. And they decided that they were going to have her run. And so not only did they invite her when she didn't even know why out to one of their get-togethers, you know, I don't remember if that was one in Palm Springs or one of those, where they introduced her around, as they did to some of the other people you've now heard of, like Ted Cruz, to their donors, where she, you know, walked away with, I think it said $60,000 or something in commitments just from, like, being there a day. But these, you know, you have to imagine, these people talk to their friends and you know,
yep,
all these different people maxed out to her. But on top of that, somebody, this guy associated with the you know, the whole Koch brothers operation, started a firm, and money came into that firm magically and was put out there in favor of Joni Ernst, the C4, so that you wouldn't know who was funding it. And they spent millions on ads for her. And in the primary too. So it's not just them getting involved in the general election. I mean, we've seen some of this before, but knowing the Koch brothers are doing it, it's just something more nefarious about them, because they have so much money and they put so much money into this, into all the various things they do. I mean, it is a huge sprawling operation, which we learn more about all the time. So yeah, that's what you're talking about. No transparency.
And I want people to understand this dynamic here, because this is not, I mean, you know, when I first came to New York as a comedian, I would perform in certain rooms, and occasionally you'd have, let's say, network executives who would come by, and my manager was able to get me an audition for stuff because they had seen me. This is the equivalent of a network coming in without anybody even selling me to them. They grab me, they say, we're going to put millions of dollars around you to make you a star. This doesn't even happen in for-profit industries, okay? Even the most sort of like analogous industries. They're doing something that is fundamentally different. I mean, it's one thing for someone to say, like, you know, I mean, we can imagine the scenario where, like, oh, there's a war hero. You know, like in Oklahoma, there's a war hero. And somebody from the Republican Party or the Democratic Party says, hey, Bob, you're a war hero. You should really contemplate running for office. Come on. I'll meet you to some party apparatchiks, and we'll see if you're into this. And if you think you're up for it, we can go out and we can try and raise money for you. This is not even that. This is out of the blue. One day, this state senator gets an invitation to come, basically go through an audition, more or less, without her being aware of it. And at the end of it, she's awarded, she had the golden ticket. And guess who owns Charlie and the Chocolate Factory now? You do. And you just go back to your state, and all of a sudden, huge swaths of money are going to be shipped in there. You're going to have a professional consulting agency that is going to come in and going to be working on your behalf. And boom, that's it. I mean, this is unprecedented.
Well, this is big business in the end.
Yep.
I mean, they're treating it like that. You know, they are recruiting somebody, and you said this doesn't generally happen, but in this case, by recruiting somebody who they see has the talent, if they're willing to put the money behind them, some training potentially, and whatever, can become a U.S. senator. I mean, you know, think about that investment for them.
And this, and Joni Ernst, folks, I mean, people have to realize this. This is one of those sort of classic proof of concept ideas, right? I mean, they look at Joni Ernst, and they are now sitting around at Koch headquarters or wherever that is. I think they're somewhat decentralized. But they're basically sitting around saying, like, we went into a state, took someone who was a virtual unknown, and made her one who's not only unknown, but was sort of like, you know, well on the margins of, you know, just 5 or 10 years ago would have been considered an absolute nut, frankly.
Yes.
And
on the margins of the party, also with zero name recognition. And at that point, not even 100% sure she was going to run in that race.
And now she's a sitting senator. And they've got to be looking at each other saying, like, okay, granted, we did it in Iowa. Maybe we didn't need as much money. But that's not really an issue for us, because we've got almost $900 billion committed at this point. And so they're going in, like, if we can do this in Iowa, with a virtual unknown for a federal seat. What can't we do?
And no, that's, I mean, for a U.S. Senate seat. So they've done it on the top state level.
Yep.
Clearly they've done it for governor, because I don't know if all the money's ever come out that they probably pumped into Scott Walker. I mean, clearly he was one of these early type recruits of theirs they love too. My guess is there's a dozen other of them, if not two dozen or more,
yep,
you know, who are state officials who are hiding in plain sight. You know what I mean? I mean, they're right there. We just haven't, you know, I mean, I, believe me when I tell you, I'm very suspicious of the state treasurer in this state, Josh Mandel, who tried to take on Sherrod Brown and a ton of money. He was better funded than anybody else out there. And he's a complete Tea Party nut, you know, on the right. And he won re-election as state treasurer here, but he lost to Sherrod in between. But there's no doubt that he's being groomed for a national. You know, he was a military guy, Jewish Republican. You know, you don't get that many of those these days, at least who run for office and are Tea Partiers. And they've been grooming him clearly for the various forces have forever. But my guess is we'll find out the Koch brothers are involved in some way at some point. And it's, you know, not really a secret around here. His second term will be up in 18, which happens to be when Sherrod is up for re-election again. Mm. And chances are he will take him on again. So, I mean, they're doing this kind of stuff, in I'm sure, at this point, in states all around the country. But this is sort of a really revealing sort of thing at what level they grab, because he was a state rep when he started running for this. At what level they're willing to grab people. Soon enough, they'll be going to city councils or school boards. Maybe they already are.
Let me read just a couple of quick little graphs from this, because I mean, this gives people a notion. There's two things that really jumped out at me. After 7 months after Ernst won over the Koch allies at this sort of like a Koch retreat, right, that she was invited to and had, very probably little understanding of why she was going at the beginning, a low-profile operative named Carl Crow, who'd worked for years in the Koch network, created a nonprofit group called Trees of Liberty. Within weeks of starting this organization. Now, Cliff, you go out there, you've fundraised for different things, you've seen fundraisers. Within weeks, they launched an advertising yep. campaign that included a $260,000 statewide television ad buy. And I got news for you, in Iowa, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, that goes a travels. Long way there.
And a complimentary web campaign attacking Ernst's most competitive GOP rival. Little has been known about where Trees of Liberty got its cash or how it spent it. That's because the group was created under a section of the tax code that allows groups to shield donor identities and requires the disclosure of only limited information about spending to the IRS many months after an election in which the spending occurred. But sources tell Politico the Trees of Liberty got its cash from Freedom Partners Chamber of Commerce, whatever the F that is, and their 2014 tax form, due to be filed with the IRS in coming days, will more than a year and a half after Trees aired in the Iowa Senate primary. And that's where this information is starting to come out. Trees of Liberty carefully tailored its ad campaign to avoid triggering rules that would have required more financial disclosure during the campaign. It pulled down the television ads just before the calendar reached the 1 month election countdown.
Yep.
Had the ad aired within that month, Trees of Liberty would have been required to report its spending, but not its donors, to the FEC. So do you understand what's going on? The level of sophistication for that this guy, Carl Crow, had, and the ability to have money, it's a slush fund.
Or others who are talking to him, right?
It is a slush fund.
I think much like that group, he's just the front. That's why he's
exactly.
a little known operative, because he doesn't have a paper trail on him. People aren't going to find much on him. They're not going to know much on him.
They're not going to pay attention to him. Exactly. Exactly.
Somebody, people behind the scenes with a hell of a lot more sophistication than that guy, I'm sure, are telling him what to do.
Right. This guy, Carl Crow, is not intimately, not spending his time because, you know, who knows if Carl Crow had ever managed $260,000 for an ad buy before in the state of Iowa. I mean,
that's right.
Under what circumstance would you have that, that opportunity?
Clearly, they had lawyers looking at this, like, what
yep.
day do we need to pull it?
Yep.
You know, I'm sure it's top-level Koch brothers lawyers and, you know... Yeah, that's where we are, man.
And,
good job, Kennedy.
And just listen to some of the network groups. I mean, just want people to hear the names so you get a sense
yep.
of just sort of like what is going on in this Koch world. Now, remember, they haven't even dropped their $900 billion yet. They haven't even dropped it. Maybe they have a little bit, but they're not claiming that they have. I imagine that the vast amount of money has yet to be spent. Some network groups, including Freedom Partners, that sounds like a Koch organization, Americans for Prosperity, that's a well-known Koch organization, Concerned Veterans for America, and Libre Initiative. These are just some of the groups in the network. So in other words, the money
is... If it has a different, like, you know, version of the word freedom in it, in any language, it's
that's
them.
It. Right, exactly.
If it has the word partners, I mean, seriously, they start being patterns here, right? I mean, so it's kind of obvious that these groups are all them.
It's all like if the representative bump into each other, you know, and they're naked at one of those Bilderberger group meetings in the woods or something, then they know. Then they have to say, oh, no, I'm from Freedom Partners. Oh, Freedom Partners. Yes, well,
I'm from... Well, they each get whatever it is, whichever group they're from, branded on their ass, I'm sure. So.
I'm from Freedom Associates. Oh, whoa,
exactly.
Okay. All right, so that is where the smart money lies on some level. And then we have sort of like the dumb money that has created these the Frankensteins that has brought to us now Donald Trump and frankly, I mean, the rest of the Republican Party. Let's talk a little bit about this piece in the Washington Post.
And before we do, I just want to say something also, which is I think is important here, which is that at this point in time, and this can change at any moment, it just happens that the two people that have the most appeal to the Republican base right now are, you know, these two jokers who we're about to talk about are at odds with the Koch brothers because they're not complete free marketeers that reach at least on the level that the Koch brothers' standards are. So they're attacking each other. They're attacking them back and forth. The thing is that imagine if you get a billionaire candidate like Donald Trump willing to spend their money, and then the Koch brothers do support them, and they do have that appeal, at least to Republicans. You know what I mean? I mean, we haven't run into that yet.
Yeah,
that's dangerous, just thinking about that.
I mean, the one upshot is that generally, you know, these billionaires, unless they're a little bit touched, don't want to actually run. They want to just own the guy. And in this instance,
right,
nobody owns Trump. And now, you know, somebody tweeted at me last night that Ezra Klein had tweeted, nobody ever predicted that Trump would be this durable, and forced me to go back into our YouTubes. And I think I found something from mid-June where I was recounting the night that I was on Hayes, I think a couple of days earlier, coming out of the green room where there were two reporters there. I think, I can't remember, Casey, what's her, and Eamon, and had just like, in the green room, I just had this sort of like weird, you know, hissy fit where I was just like, they were talking about Trump, like, does he really believe this stuff? I mean, this is such a joke. When's he going to drop out? And I was just like, you guys don't understand what's going on. And Trump.
I mean, my whole thing, I think I've been pretty consistent on that on your show from the beginning. You know, looking at people. I mean, it's not that either you are, I are so brilliant. You need to look at the factors, not of what determined who got elected 8-12 years ago in the Republican Party. You need to look at what keeps somebody afloat now.
And frankly, it's also
You know what it is? Did you ever? You know, I'm guessing popular show. A lot of people listening to this watch Seinfeld, right? You know, the day when George goes around and does the opposite of everything that pops into his head and it works out so brilliantly for him, he ends up getting the job with the Yankees.
Right.
Well, and I mean, what you need to think is if something sounds completely terrible to you because you're a normal functioning human being, it's good. If it sounds terrible to you, it will sound great to the Republican base. And if it sounds great to you, you know, if you find yourself watching those debates saying, oh, you know, John Kasich and Jeb Bush seem reasonable, it means they're going to hate them. So the opposite of whatever you think you need to remind yourself is what people in the Republican Party who just determine these things are thinking. And there's many more of them now. And a lot of the ones who are the, you know, upstarts who aren't the old money country club Republican types, they're, you know, the upstarts have a lot more in numbers. They've got some of them who become new money, as they would call them at the country clubs, and have much more control over the process than they used to. And, you know, like, you know, well, Koch brothers aren't new money, but they've gotten newly incredibly rich. And that's, you know, that has changed, you know, and then there's the organs like Rush Limbaugh and Fox News and places that pump, you know, paranoid propaganda into people's heads.
Well, I think I think that is it. I mean, I think it's not so much that it's that you and I and people who sort of travel in this world, I mean, who deal with this type of stuff, we know what is success. Like, we know what Rush Limbaugh is saying on a daily basis. We
right.
actually think that at one point that reaches and is absorbed by people. And look, this isn't coming out of nowhere.
That channel, I mean, everybody, go ahead, sorry.
Well, I mean, just contemplate that. I want people to contemplate this for a moment, okay? In 2008, you have a supposedly the most independent, most reasonable Republican that has ever been there in modern history, John McCain. Right. I mean, because this is the guy who you know, John Stewart liked. And I mean, this was the guy who was the reasonable guy who had been maligned and attacked by George W. Bush in the 2000 primary. People forget about that, that he was that George Bush went after the fact that they had adopted a kid. And this
from
guy,
Sri Lanka,
right, from Sri Lanka,
the black love child was what they said about
it. Right. And by 2008, this guy, to salvage his campaign, picks Sarah Palin. And then if you go to 2012, Mitt Romney, the moderate, the establishment character, the guy who was, you know, Massachusetts governor. By February, March, April, May of 2012, when people are thinking, when's the guy going to pivot? He can never, ever pivot to the center. He leaves that guy behind to get the Republican Party to rally around him. This is exactly along that trajectory. That if you graph that, the next obvious thing is that instead of a guy who has to associate himself with one of the lunatics, and then the next guy who has to pretend that he's one of the lunatics, we're going to get the lunatic.
Right.
That's
where
this
leads.
It's
been happening on the state level, too. I mean, we've seen this, right? Who their nominees have been. They're you know, legitimate rape, witches, you know. I mean, you know, this has happened in recent primaries, and not just in crazy right-wing states where, sadly, when those people become the nominee, they actually get elected, like Matt Bevin, who recently did. You know, we're talking about they end up losing to us most of the time in those states with, you know, like, for example, Christine O'Donnell in Delaware. But the fact that when people used to say that you know, blue or purple states were different, not the Republican electorate there.
Right.
They may be a little different in the southern electorate. They may be, you know, maybe they've had racial issues thrust in their face in a little bit less, or whatever, but they're all singing from the same hymnal now. It's not like they've had separate experiences. They're all listening to Rush Limbaugh. They're all watching Fox News. And this is, you know, this has been proven. I mean, you can read files from, you know, that have been released by the CIA. I mean, this kind of propaganda, this is what you do when you want to go and take over a government in another country. You feed people who are normal people, because you hear these stories again and again about people that like lose, you know, loved ones they in their family they can no longer talk to because they were a John Kennedy Democrat, and suddenly they're a right wing nut because they started listening to Rush Limbaugh. I mean, I'm serious. Like, this stuff works on people that have certain kinds of traits and certain insecurities and certain paranoia and whatever. Many people that in a different time would have been completely normal people and Democrats have been turned into raving lunatics by what they hear. And it is frightening. But then you add in the Koch brothers stuff and other independent sources that aren't coming from the establishment of the Republican Party. Sometimes they fight each other, but often they're in conjunction. And so they move the needle, too. And then crazy right wing groups that used to be much more moderate, like the Chamber of Commerce or the NRA, that send out insane emails to people also using the same. I mean, they're hearing all the same crazy crap from all the same people.
I want to read a couple of sentences from this piece from the Washington Post entitled "Time for GOP Panic? ? Establishment worried Carson or Trump might win," and we'll get to that final line because it is really stunning. And it talks about the Republican elites are now sort of they're all having their come to Jesus moment about the dominance and durability of Trump and Ben Carson. And the party establishment is paralyzed. Big money is still on the sidelines. And we've been saying this for a while, too. It's like, if I'm, even if I'm one of these, you know, multimillionaires or the billionaires less so, why would I sink some money into any of these candidates at this point? Because it doesn't look like any of them are going to win. I mean, yeah, somebody has to, theoretically, but
in theory,
but it doesn't look like any of them are going to win. And what you now have is that, according to other Republicans, some of the party establishment are so desperate to change the dynamic, they're talking anew about drafting Romney. And the friends, I don't know whose friends this are, but I presumably, you know, Romney friends. And, you know, you always got to take this stuff with a grain of salt, right? There's people who, these are just more people who realize, like, oh, I haven't attached myself to a candidate yet. I have no way of making money this cycle. I'd love Romney to win, and maybe I'll be able to pick up some bucks. Friends have mapped out a strategy for late entry to pick up delegates and vie for the nomination in a convention fight, according to Republicans who were briefed on the talks, though Romney has shown no indication of reviving his interest. Now, I mean, it remains to be seen, but just the idea that they're getting this desperate this late in the game, right? I mean, this is, you know, one thing if they're talking 2 or 3 months ago is just a way to light a fire under Jeb Bush. But now I don't get the feeling that this is a motivating factor. This is like, this is sort of like a break the glass, pull the lever type of situation. And from what I've heard, you know, when you talk about delegates, that the only people who've been really working on delegates in a place, let's say, like Alabama, are Carson, Cruz, and Trump. And so I think there is a full-on panic here. But let's read, I want to read this last piece here. Where is that? Because we had, oh, here it is. This is amazing.
Yeah, read that. Oh, wait.
Before we get to that one, apparently Charlie Black, okay, who's been this sort of big, longtime Republican operative.
He's been around since what, Reagan, H.W.? He's been around forever.
Even before that, I think.
I think you're right. I think he may have been involved with Ford even in 76 or so.
In this piece, he said he was briefed on the findings of two recent private focus groups of Trump supporters in Iowa and New Hampshire that showed that these voters knew little about his policy views beyond immigration. And this is the quote. Things like universal health care and other more liberal positions he's taken in the past will all get out before people vote in New Hampshire. And here's my prediction. He can predict that. They won't give a crap. They won't give a crap. Donald Trump will overcome. Because who's the messenger that these people are supposed to believe? I mean, you know,
they're going to listen to the people with names like Charlie Black over.
I mean, or Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
It's not just who's the messenger. Look, even if the Koch brothers launch some big attack on Trump, which they could because they don't like him either for being in favor of universal health care or whatever, which is not even clear he's in favor of anymore. I don't even know. He was at one point. But even if they were to go and do that, the whole point is that we've now, and again, you were saying it exactly correct. You can chart this on the graph. They've been moving further and further away from policy and towards attitude.
Yes.
The reason why the immigration thing plays so well is because you get to hate people. Healthcare is not as easy. I mean, you could say, poor people, but it's much easier to hate non-white people. And so the point of the matter is that it's all in your personality. It's all that you're calling liberals names and that you're being paranoid and you're being crazy and you're saying, you know, this is where the party is now. It's not an actual concrete policy proposals because, as John Kasich said before he got booed, they can't build that wall. There's no history in the history of the world on that kind of terrain with valleys and hills and mountains and, you know, people's personal private property. It's not going to happen, all right? But it doesn't matter because what he's conveying to them is, I hate them too when he says that. And that's all they want at this point.
And let's face it. I mean, he could say, I'm for universal health care because Obamacare is a travesty and I will get rid of it. And all they will hear is, Obamacare is a travesty. I will get rid of it. They don't know. Look, they don't know what Obamacare is. They don't know what Obamacare is. Kentucky showed that, illustrated that perfectly. They have no idea what it is that they're hating. So they can't possibly even say, like,
it's
universal.
It's a stand-in for something, right? I mean, they take words they can make sound bad. They define them. They've done it with liberal. They did it with the union. They did it with gun control. They've done it to abortion. They take words and they make it into something that it isn't really. Abortion is, hey, I'm about to give birth in 5 minutes. Let's have an abortion.
Right.
You know what I mean? Gun control is, I'm coming to everybody's house and taking out all of their guns. right? I mean, unions are, you know, shifty Italian thugs, you know, coming in and beating up on people and taking. I mean, they've got sort of things that they've communicated to everybody, and most of them are based around race. And so it's not like when they say Obamacare, the whole beauty of that is when they say that to their base, they're like, oh, yeah, the black guys program.
Right.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to for all the black people. I mean, that it has nothing to do with what it actually does. And that's why the people in, because it was called Connect in Kentucky, figured that that was different because, hey, that's helping me and my white rural neighbors. That can't be Obamacare. That's only for people that are undeserving. So, I mean, that's what you're talking about here. And so the thing is, as long as Trump displays the right attitude, and boy, does he, and when will he not, then that's what they're looking for. I don't see where any attack on that can be successful. And that's why I've said from the beginning that the only time to me where I thought Trump might not win is if he chooses not to. You know, if in the end he were to say, I've screw this, I'm going to have Secret Service agents, I don't want to live that way, I've proven I can win, and I can be the guy behind the scenes, I'm going to hand it over to Ted Cruz. But I don't see how, you know, and granted, look, we're in uncharted territory, and things can happen. I'm far from perfect in my predictions, and things could happen that I can't foresee. You know, I guess there's still, as they would always say, the live boy, dead girl scenario with Trump, or something else that I can't, you know, come up with. But everything they've tried so far, all the conventional ways of attacking him, pointing out past positions and all that stuff, have all failed.
Yeah, and I will say this, though. I mean, that it's quite possible last night was indicative of him getting to that point where he is done. I mean, this guy goes off at one point. I mean, we're going to play audio from this later in the program because it is so over the top, but he says, like, you know, he's like, they insist on my plan for ISIS. I'll bomb the shit out of them and take their oil. I mean, this is what he says. When he says that Ben Carson is pathological, that's like a child molester. And there's only two ways to get, there's only one way. I mean, all this stuff, it's what he displayed last night to me looks like a guy on the edge of a full on emotional sort of
breakdown.
Physical breakdown.
But here's the thing.
And a guy who's just basically getting out there saying,
kill him in the general. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure. This is the hilarious scenario, right? He goes out there. He's like, I'm so sick of this bull crap. I'm just going to lay it out there. I don't care what happens. I don't care if I walk away from this race. And in fact, I think literally said, I don't care if I got to walk away from this race last night. And the funny part's going to be to watch if that hurts him or helps him.
I think it helps him. I think it helps him. He's rejecting the establishment, and that's all they want. I mean, you know, like, you ever see the movie Brewster's Millions when he's trying to spend the money so he can get the huge amount of money? Richard Pryor, he has to spend, like, what, $1 million a day or whatever it is. So he runs for office because it's so expensive. And his whole thing is, don't vote for me. You know, none of the above. And, of course, everybody wants to vote for him.
Right.
They like him. I mean, it's kind of like that.
It's possible. It's possible. I mean, I don't know. I this is where, like, I, you know, lose sight of it because I've just not seen anything like this. And I don't have a sense of how many on the Republican side will actually see that video or if that's indicative of something that's even more disturbing that's going to happen soon with Trump. I mean, this guy, it really does feel like, you know, and frankly, Carson, too, from the other day. I mean, they're both, I think, just sort of, you know, let's put it this way. They haven't been pretending about who they are. And
right.
Everybody says
you
it's
gotta
a little
read
bit
that
touched.
Quote still, because that's the best part.
Well, let's get to this quote because we don't know what's going to happen with them. This quote is from an anonymous Republican strategist. Now,
we're not just talking about a Republican here. We're talking about somebody who works for Republicans and elects them, theoretically, for a living.
For a living. And it's, quote, we're potentially careening down this road of nominating somebody who frankly isn't fit to be president in terms of the basic ability and temperament to do the job. Okay. Now, okay, that's strategist talk. That's what you say to promote your candidate. It's not just that it could be somebody Hillary could destroy electorally. Okay. But what if Hillary hits a banana peel and this person becomes president?
So we've gotten to the point where Republican consultants are actually thinking the same thing all the rest of us are thinking.
Right. They're afraid of winning.
The nominee, so Hillary or whether it's Bernie or O'Malley can crush them. And yet, I have to admit, I spend that general election somewhat frightened. Because what if something does go wrong? What if something, you know, what if somebody does slip on a banana peel? What if something crazy happens? You know, it's like I want one of them to be the nominee so we can destroy them and win big and take the Senate and hopefully at least, if not take the House, but get a lot closer in state legislatures and blah, blah, blah. But there's always that risk. You know, anything's possible in politics. Anything.
Anything's possible in life. I mean, that's what this guy is saying is like the best case scenario if one of these guys gets nominated is that they get destroyed. And that we lose the Senate and we take some losses in the House. The worst case scenario is that they win.
That's amazing. You start seeing this stuff from the true believers. And I have, by the way. You know, I've had conversations with friends of mine who you know, actually come from serious Republican families recently who won't call themselves Republicans anymore, can only call themselves independents and that kind of stuff. I don't know at what point this happens, but there has to be a point eventually, and I've never come out and predicted the breakup of the Republican Party, but I don't know at what point there's enough difference there. At least as we've said, it's not between the Tea Party and the other elected members, because most of the other elected members are either as crazy or acting as crazy. They're just better on TV. But I'm talking about people that have gone along and been willing to vote Republican based on, you know, taxes or certain things like that. And some of those very people who I know, who I've always disagreed with, you know, on politics and whatever, are coming to me, you know. I mean, hell, I knew a guy I went to college with who we came back, we were friends, we lived in New York. He was a hedge fund guy. At one point, he was seriously thinking back in, like, what was it, 96, of voting for Pat Buchanan. So this is the type of person we're talking about, right? Thankfully, he came back to reality from that, and he was generally a sort of – it was only if that was against a Democrat, not in the primary. He was more of a sort of center-right Republican. He's a full-on Democrat now, always votes Democratic. I mean, I'm saying that, like, they're losing people like that, and I don't – at what point when, you know, when they start losing people like that, does it sort of become something where you're just like – how much longer can they get elected? And I mean, they can in about 15 to 20
And here's
20
the thing.
States,
when it's going to get even worse for it. This is the thing, is that there's this notion of they're going to overreach and there's going to be some awareness in the Republican Party. They're going to steer it back. I will tell you exactly what the reaction will be of the Republican Party. And you tell me who the nominee is. I will tell you what the reaction is going to be when they lose. When Ted Cruz loses, it's going to be because the establishment undermined him. When Marco Rubio loses, he's too liberal immigration. When Donald Trump loses, it's going to be because the Republican establishment undermined him. When Ben Carson loses, it's going to be the Republican establishment undermines
him. Also, don't forget the media.
And the media, right. It's the one true Scotsman, right? And it's only going to get worse. You graph it with going from George W. to McCain having to pick Palin to Romney having to pretend he's Palin.
And Paul Ryan.
Paul Ryan to basically where we are, I think, this year, which is it's not going to be Palin.
And you
can
graph that in the Senate, too, which is another easy way to do it. You can go back a decade ago, you know, when you still had people that were you know, moderate conservatives or conservatives, but conservatives who had at least an ounce of common sense in there, Olympia Snowe or Dick Lugar. At this point, you know, and chances are, unless that they're going to lose another one, because it's such a Democratic state in a Democratic year, that Mark Kirk will lose this time. He's probably by far the most moderate one in there right now. I mean, they're, you know, it's the thing is it's in a death spiral. The only thing that when people I say that, people are like, no, you know, it's not going to crash tomorrow. And I have to explain, I'm not saying it's going to crash tomorrow. It could be a decade and a half death spiral for all I know. I don't know how long it takes them to get there, but they're getting more and more.
But they can't pull out of it is the bottom line. We don't know the rate of dissension, but we do know that there is no pulling out of this death spiral. Cliffy, as always.
And another uplifting conversation by Cliff and Sam.
Well, I think what we should do is start to contemplate the idea of moving this whole thing to Finland, maybe to Denmark. We'll head over there. This is Sweden. Sounds good from all I'm hearing now these days. And so.
Oh, it's awesome. I've been there, man. It's beautiful country, great health care. Streets in Stockholm are actually clean. You know, we should start thinking about this. There's some nice places out there in the world that
we'd have
that
to change
have,
the opening.
That learned a lesson from World War II and said we're going to stop crazy people from getting in power.
We had to change the opening, but we'll
no. I mean, in all seriousness, I know I got to go, so I will run. I'll just say, you know, it'll be to be continued.
Indeed.
This is going to be an interesting election season. Thanks for having me on, as always, man.
Okay. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Matthew, film guy, you got to send quickly to Majority Reporters your theme song. Where, you don't have his theme song? Where is it? You've played it before, haven't you?
No, not since I've been here.
We definitely have it somewhere. It's not in the weekly elements somewhere. Matthew Film Guy will send it to Majority Reporters because I know he's listening right now, and I know he always has it at his fingertips. So here's what we're going to do. Do we have a song from Jimmy Reefer Cake?
We do, yes.
And what is the name of that song, Matt?
It's TPP-TP.
TPP-TP. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to listen to the Jimmy Reefer Cake song, TPP-TP. And also, maybe while Matthew Film Guy is here, we'll play the uncovered. I mean, this is an amazing find because, you know, Matt and Michael went to a trip. Well, we'll talk about it, but they went to a record store and were leafing through the records. And what they found was unbelievable. First, we will play Jimmy Reefer Cake's TPP. Those of you listening for the first time, Jimmy Reefer Cake, of course, every week, almost every week, for years, has been sending us a song that more often than not reflects the news of the week. And sometimes Jimmy Reefer Cake includes something about reefer. All right. And his blog is, of course, allthehypocrisy.com. Let's hear that Jimmy Reefer Cake song while I get film guy Matthew on the phone.
President Obama promised us a new transparency. But this TPP deal is more of the same hypocrisy. They talk and talk about the TPP, but it won't explain the issue as well as printing the text of the TPP on your very own toilet tissue. This TPP is not for me. The TPP is not for you. You must agree that the TPP-TP should be covered in your poo. Should be covered in your poo. For yourself or as a gift, double ply quality is the best. The place to go to get some is tpptp.us. The most offending excerpts of the TPP text. Just go on, see the friendly folks at tpptp.us. This TPP is not for me. This TPP is not for you. You must agree that the TPP-TP should be covered in your poo. Should be covered in your poo.
There you go. Should be covered in your poo. Or words to live by, ladies and gentlemen. Words to live by. Good job, Jimmy Reefer Cake. Very well done. Expressed at least the emotional sentiments about the criticism of the TPP, if not the actual specifics from a policy standpoint. Nevertheless, I think the covering of poo is, I think, metaphorical in my estimation. And with that said, ladies and gentlemen, let's play another theme song for the day. This one not by Jimmy Reefer Cake, one of the few that is not by Jimmy Reefer Cake. Film guy Matthew felt very strongly about getting his own theme song, so he had one commissioned. And for those of you who don't like heavy metal, maybe step back from your radio device. Here it is.
Matthew, the film guy, is choosing a strange. Cassavetes on Netflix and other such themes. Maybe you'll watch one and learn a few themes. Please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew, please recommend me a movie to stream.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there is another media outlet in the country, nay, the world, where you can have a back-to-back reference to the TPP and rubbing your poo on it, back-to-back with a heavy metal song, including the words Cassavetes, then turn off your listening device right now and go listen to that, because this is the type of quality material we bring you on a daily basis. Matthew Film Guy, how are you?
Hey, Sam, I'm great. Always good to be here with you. I'm just finishing off my second cup of BRL coffee, Break Room Live coffee, which is what I call it when I mix WTF blend with the Majority Report blend from justcoffee.coop.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Matthew, a film guy reaching well back into time when Just Coffee was the where we basically, I mean, in some ways that changed their business. They became a sponsor for Break Room Live, then went on to be a sponsor for WTF, which changed their business. And they, I think, continued to make their business more or less the same. But
I may be personally keeping them in business with the amount of 5-pound bags of coffee that I order from them on a regular basis, always using the Majority coupon code, of course.
I love it. No, they're actually doing quite well. I mean, this is, they hopped online right at the right time, and the coffee's a hit. I've told you the story about going into a coffee shop in Hudson, New York, and they were serving that coffee. And Mila almost, almost fainted when she saw that they had the Majority Report coffee there.
Yeah.
Well,
that's a big moment.
Yeah, great story. Right. Okay. Thank you, Matthew. All right. Great talking to you, buddy.
Yeah.
Now, Matthew, what is going on with you? What is going on with you? What are you doing these days?
It's been a heady time for me, Sam. You know, I've been my name has been bandied about in various circles for various different positions, and I've been considered for various things from a segment producer for the new Sam B show and for the old Daily Show.
Yeah.
And
how did that work?
As an editor on a feature film that would have had me going to Poland. I didn't get that one, but it's sort of a good news, bad news situation because I would have had to have been in Poland for 2 months in the winter. But
that seems like good news to me. I mean,
what's that?
I don't know. I mean,
good news?
Yeah. I mean, when do you get a chance to go to Poland for 2 months, all expenses paid?
Yeah. You know, it would have been nice. And the project was actually pretty great, too. It's a film that I'm going to be looking forward to seeing when it finally does come out. They went with a European editor for cost reasons. But yeah, I understand. It's that's the business, but you know, I'm out there getting,
so wait, what happened? None of those things came through?
The Sam B thing sort of semi came through. They had one position as for field, producer open, which I didn't get, but they liked enough of my pitches that, they're going to probably bring me on a freelance basis at the
pitch,
you know, independent stuff, to their regular staff, which that'll be fun.
That'll be great. I'm really looking forward to that show. You know, I got to tell you, I mean, I understand why she didn't want The Daily Show, because that is, stepping into somebody else's vehicle like that can be very difficult, particularly when it's so closely associated with a certain person. But I am very much looking forward to her show, because I always found her stuff to be some of the best on that
program. Yeah, definitely. I have a friend who worked at The Daily Show as a producer, Miles Kahn, for many years, which I think you know him through Twitter or something, and he's now the executive producer on her show, and he does great stuff. So I'm looking forward to it too.
Oh, and so that's it. It's basically a friend, a crane. Yeah. You got a crane up there.
Yeah, it's inside stuff. But hey, he's not in the business of giving out favors to nobodies, you know. So he knew he was asking for stuff, and a lot of my Break Room Live stuff that I did with you and Mark, I think, got me in the door there. So you know,
really,
I.
I think
especially the Mark stuff.
I was going to say, suggesting that the bad situationist stuff did not help you out. Now I should tell people, because even
let's just say certain things are falling off my resume as time goes on.
Matthew, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Are you there? We can't hear you. I'm sorry. We must have a bad connection.
Oh, wow. What am I, a libertarian here? No, I'm only kidding. That's on my resume. You better believe it.
New
Especially
Matt.
For my feature film.
New
stuff.
Matt, who is here, was asking me, like, how do you know film guy Matthew? And I guess we tell it. It would remind people every now and then. But when I was.
Or every time I'm on, but okay.
All right. Forget it.
No, go ahead. Matt, no, new you, Matt and Classic Kelly need to hear it.
All right. I will tell. Kelly just looked up and she just had a look on her face like, no, I don't. She didn't seem to be in the slightest bit curious as to what's going on. Is that right, Kelly? You don't care at all.
Untrue.
What?
Untrue.
What's untrue?
That I don't care what's going on.
I'm not saying that you don't care what's going on. Do you not know what's going on? Were you not listening to what the exchange we just had?
There is a third way.
Do you have your headphones on?
There is both a don't know, don't care scenario.
What is the scenario, Kelly?
Of what's happening right now?
So there you have it, Matthew. Very compelling stuff. So
Did someone maybe tell Kelly that I'm Jewish? Is that what it is?
No. Oh, boy. I'm sure he just picked that up. I better email Chance.
Right. Now, you could just my voice.
Now let's play this tune, okay? Now because
what?
Well, you shot the record. I don't know if you know this, but you do know this. Matthew or new Matt, I should say, and Michael came back the other day, and they had gone to one of those few remaining vinyl stores that you find deep in corners of Brooklyn, and
yeah, they're Brooklynite, yeah.
And they go in, and it's, you know, no, the filing system's not even there. It's just bins and bins of records. I guess these guys going through that, and then they go out and have
team
like
building exercise.
Team building, and then they go out, Michael wanted to show Matt his favorite wine bar, and so they go and they have
took him to a yoga class.
Yoga,
really,
and then some Fumé Blanc
life.
Afterwards.
That's correct.
And they came back with this record, ladies and gentlemen, and film guy Matthew has actually just shot a video of the record itself. And we're going to put this up on YouTube and put it on our Facebook page over the weekend. You're going to want to pass this around. But here is the song. And as you know, film guy Matthew, it is the song. Well, Michael, do you want to describe what it is?
This was, stunning. To rob your favorite word from you. But basically what Matt and I discovered, we're both 90s hip-hop fans. And we like, even though Nas is my favorite, but we both like the 90s Rockefeller record era, which is very fitting, very Brooklyn. And we discovered this LP at the store with a Rockefeller insignia on it. And
it's clearly a recent,
It's recent. I don't know how it came to be in that store or why it has that insignia, but I think that there's an attempt to kind of associate it with that brand in the Rockefeller record era. And
all right, let's play.
I mean, it's stunning. That's all right, I could say.
Here is the song.
A lot of people around here trying to pretend like they love the country when all they've been doing is hating it. Deceitful, lying liberal media. And we all know that their transgender bathrooms are making kids addicted to crack. I was the only one with the courage to say this. I'm not a business man. I am a business man. On multiple levels, like Manitech. Buy their glyconutrients and they'll send me checks. Cause I'm blessed. I'm blessed. By God, this is why the media calls me a fraud. Just stop. Just stop. Or I'll stab you like I stabbed my friend when he turned down my tune and hit his belt buckle. So I ran to the bathroom. When I got there, I heard God in my head. So I locked the door and here's what he said. Joseph built pyramids to store the grain because the pharaohs had trouble making it rain. As president, this is what you need to explain. The first to take the scalpel to the liberal media brains. To the liberal media brains. That's who I was before I found the divine light. Became a neurosurgeon. I was the type of dude that would attack my mama with a hammer and set her on fire before I found God. One time I suffocated one of my relatives until 10 people pulled me off of him, and people trying to pretend like that a lie. They're trying to act like my whole backstory was Rick Ross and he was a prison security guard, except this is all real. This ain't no Rick Ross.
Wow.
They can hate, but I'm gonna love what I love, and that's this country.
So, Ben Carson having cut and I guess a B side, or maybe that was an A side. I'm not sure which side that was.
Yeah, it's a media diss track.
It's a media diss track.
Ben Carson's liberal media diss track.
So, Matthew, film guy, thank you for videotaping that record. We will have that video up this weekend on Facebook and everywhere. It's a little bit disturbing, but also enjoyable. And you know, maybe it's good Saturday night music. Put the lights down.
He's got a good flow.
Yeah.
He's got that great laid-back sort of mid-90s flow. I like that.
Yes. Seems like he's heavily medicated again when he was recording that. Now, Matthew, film guy. So you've been...
I'm still here.
You've been applying to all these jobs. They haven't necessarily come through in the way that you wanted to, but your spirits still sound good. And
I'm still teaching my classes, and I'm still, doing my corporate work, which pays the bills for sure, and allows me to go out and soak up all the culture and different film events that the city has to offer. You know,
now, I feel like we're around Thanksgiving time. I think we asked you this question last Thanksgiving. What's going on? Aren't you already wed? What is going on?
Oh, I'm engaged, Sam. It's been an extended engagement, but we have our sights set on a date next year. Mary and I both turned 40 this year, and we did separate little celebrations for that. For Mary's birthday, we went.
You
on
didn't.
That
you didn't invite each other to the separations and to the celebrations, or?
No, we did, but we just wanted to sort of clear the calendar of any other big events during this momentous occasion where we.
Because you said they were separate, and I was just wondering if, like, you didn't celebrate together, like you wouldn't celebrate with each other.
No, we did. We did. We like to celebrate with each other, momentous. I don't know what you do with Nikki.
Well, once you get married, it's better to do it separately.
Right. Yeah, I understand.
Even on our anniversary, we actually went to separate movies.
Oh, that's good. That's nice. Hey, listen, space and boundaries, that's a good thing for any couple to be able to negotiate cleanly.
Yes. The greatest grift you could give me, honey. Let me see this movie by myself. Huh?
Well, we went to go see Mad Max 3D, and I told her I can't, I don't think I can watch the 3D. I got in there. I literally could not see it because of my glasses. And so I had to go down and watch.
And my glasses and my shoes.
And I had to go down and watch.
I went to the movie and I can't see so good.
I can't go in, God damn it.
That's how I tried to get my money back. I know these glasses, they don't work over my regular ones.
And you people, I'm going to sue you.
Why is there so much light coming from below?
Actually, Sam, I gotta tell you, I have stopped going to 3D movies. I also cannot make out what's going on half the time.
I can't.
And I feel fully immersed in a large screen 2D environment.
Yes,
so.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I went down and watched the Brian Wilson movie, and that was perfectly fine.
Cool.
But I wanted to see Mad Max, and now I'll never see it.
Yeah. I've pre-bought my tickets for Star Wars, as I am culturally programmed to do, as I was raised in the mid to late 70s.
So wait, is this one going to be good?
I don't know, but look, if it's got lightsabers and the music in it, it's worth $15 or whatever it is. So I bought the 2D tickets, I don't need to shell out $30. Star Wars has gotten plenty of my money over the years. But as far as that goes, I got a great seat. They're selling them... with assigned seating. And
when is the movie coming out?
December 19th.
And let me ask you this. Do you wear something there? Do you wear, like, do you go as, like, a Darth Vader or some type of stormtrooper?
I may wear my Luke Skywalker underoos, but I'm not so gauche to wear them on the outside.
Use the Force. Is that what you do? You walk around like that? Do you have, like, a little Yoda finger or something?
No, honestly, I'm much more of a Star Trek fan in later years because that's what happens when Star Wars fans
now,
grow
what
up.
Happens? But, what happens if you show up at the Star Wars movie wearing your Star Trek shirt?
I think
do you get beat up or something, or do you get shot with a light?
You're subject to the worst
saber?
Thing in the world. It's nerd rage and ridicule.
All right. So, Matthew. The film that you suggested last week was, or last time you were on, was, do you remember?
Does it really matter, Sam? You didn't see it.
No, I don't know if I did. I may have. I can't remember.
Yeah.
All right. Look, let's just get to this week's math. Let's not wallow.
There is one other thing I wanted to mention to you, and I wanted your support on this, is in terms of things that Mary and I are doing together. This weekend is our first Taekwondo tournament. And I know that you've had your experiences there.
Have you ever done a tournament? Wait, you're doing Taekwondo now?
Yeah, I think I mentioned this to you, and you had the same exact reaction last time. Like, wow, I used to do Taekwondo, so I thought I'd bring it up to you again. But apparently you listen to these segments very closely.
So wait a second. Did you ever tell me this before, that you were doing Taekwondo?
Yes, and I also just told you that I just told you before.
Wow, I didn't know that. And my understanding is you're doing a tournament soon.
I'm doing a tournament, Sam, so you got any tips or words of advice for us going into our first tournament?
Yeah, don't be afraid of that other guy. Wax on, wax off, buddy.
All right. I do a lot of waxing on and waxing off. That's good.
You know
all right,
what?
I'll
no
take
one,
that. Thank you.
Did anybody in this office know what I was referencing?
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Matt, did you?
Did Michael say no?
Michael said no.
Is that from Karate Kid?
Yeah, okay.
Everyone knows that.
All right. I was just checking. I don't know.
New Matt. Don't be ridiculous. That's an ongoing
thing. Okay, I just wasn't sure. I was just keeping it real. Just now.
It's like, Sam, it's like asking you, do you know what There's No Place Like Home is from?
What's that from?
Oh, boy. Oh,
Matthew,
boy.
Film guy, yeah. What film are you going to recommend for us this week?
All right, so as you know, I live in Astoria, Queens, and they have the greatest film museum in the country, the Museum of the Moving Image, and recently they did a retrospective of a French filmmaker who is now passed away but who made amazing films through the 70s and 80s, and I got to see a whole bunch of them, and this one really struck me as just a remarkable accomplishment in cinema per se and also just in art of sort of the growing of youth into adulthood. And it's a film called A Nos Amours, To Our Lovers in French. And it's by the French filmmaker Maurice Pialat, which I don't know if you've ever heard of him, Sam, but he is an amazing filmmaker. Sometimes he gets painted with the brush of being the French John Cassavetes, which is a little reductive and maybe not totally accurate. But this film in particular is, I think, what earned him that kind of moniker, because it's a really intense film about a young woman. And this is also something you might want to watch to prepare yourself for Myla's inevitable transition from little girl into woman. And it doesn't paint a pretty picture, I'll warn you, but it's about a girl who struggles with her sort of sexual awakening and her sort of move into adulthood and the ripple effect it has on her family. Her father, who is actually played by Maurice Pialat, looks at her and says, like, where's the little girl I used to know? And now she's like this terror who's like skipping school and hanging out with various boys. And it's sort of about all of her attempts to sort of find meaning in her life through somewhat meaningless sexual relations with other boys, and also the effect that has in her sort of becoming a sexual being on her mother, who turns into a really tense sort of standoff between them. And her older
let me just
brother,
say,
this is like life.
Let me just say,
Sam's life.
Hold on for a second. Let me just say that the look on Kelly's face right now.
This might have been it might have been better to bring up Myla afterward, because bringing her up beforehand and then describing the movie is just terror-inducing.
My greatest fear
that
is
may that may have that may have not escaped my notice.
Matthew, I will say this: if it's possible, if Myla comes through that speaking French, I will be fine with it. If she could just learn a second language, then I'll be perfectly happy with it. What is the name of the movie?
It's a French title, which my French is not the best. It's called A Nos Amours, To Our Lovers, and it's on Hulu.
How do I spell that first word?
A, just the letter A.
Yeah.
And then N-O-S, you know, in French pronounced no.
N-O-S.
Amours. I know, you know more French than me.
Okay.
You know more French than me.
I know.
And it's not just the subject matter that I want to stress in this movie, but his filmmaking style is so powerful. He basically cuts out all sort of, I want to say like, you know, like narrative extraneous information. Like some of the cuts just instantly go like 3 months into the future, 4 months into the future, and without any kind of orienting information. Like there's not a lot of description, and you really have to keep up with what's happening. And it's like filmmaking with no fat on it. It's just really right to the heart of these emotional scenes. And he's famous for that. And, you know, it's sort of an unforgiving style because you really do have to lean forward and get into it. But it's so powerful to see how it presents itself. And there's one famous scene in this where Maurice Pialat, as a director, improvised a scene where he was supposed to not be there, and he comes in and he kind of like rails on his family for their hypocrisy and all the problems with them, and it literally is beating up the cast on camera. So there's some really tense and brutal moments in this film that you have to see to believe. I just really suggest that you watch it with your whole family.
Thank you, Matthew Film Guy. I look forward to this representation of my almost
what's
immediate future. Well, I appreciate that. That's great. Thank you. That does sound like a good movie.
It is a great movie. It is one of the best movies that I've ever seen, and I see a lot.
Well, we should put a link to it somewhere. I don't know. Maybe IMDb.
Yeah. It's on the Criterion Collection, too. If you don't have Hulu Plus, it's on the Criterion Collection. You can get the DVD.
In the podcast description, we put in, right, what movie is chosen, right? Okay, good.
Yeah, sometimes. All right.
Well, Matthew Film Guy, thank you so much for coming on, buddy.
Always my pleasure.
All right, we will talk to you soon. Oh, do you want to give out your eBay page or your Twitter handle?
Oh, you know, right now eBay is laying a little fallow. I've gotten rid of a lot of good stuff that I've collected from my relatives who didn't want them. But right now, that's laying fallow. But you can find me at Langdon Boom everywhere. Twitter/Langdon Boom. That's my Twitter handle. And everywhere else on the web, I'm the only Langdon Boom out there. Langdon Boom Productions, that's me. So see you there.
All right. Well, there you go. The only Langdon Boom Productions out there. One that's shocking. Matthew Film Guy, thank you so much, bud.
My pleasure. Take care, Sam.
All right, folks. We will now head into our fun half, I believe, right? I mean, we can't. Hour 22 minutes is still like a freebie Friday, and we still got a member show to go, and we've got all this sound of the craziest. Honestly, I swear to you, this stuff is just out of control, this Donald Trump stuff. It is epic insanity.
Back to form.
This is a guy near the breaking point, I think. And I don't know if he takes a break or he just plows through and sees if he can just burn this whole thing down. I think Kelly's voting for, she thinks he's going to burn it down. It's going to be fascinating to see, like, if this hurts him in any way, because if it doesn't, it's really one of those situations where he's just not going to be able to go down to the polls under any circumstance. I mean, honestly, I think the guy could, if he continues on this trajectory, I think like within 2 weeks, he's just going to get up there with a hatchet and say, just look, I'm going to chop my finger off, right? And just slice his finger off or something. We will play the audio from that in the fun half of the program. Folks, again, join themajorityreport.com. Join themajorityreport.com to support this program. As a thank you, we give you an extra, gosh, some days an hour, some days 50 minutes. I mean, I'm going to try and cut down. I'm going to cut down on the free show, too. It's just too much. It's too much. All right, folks, Saturday night is the Democratic debate. It's in Iowa. I'm pissed about it. I'm pissed that it's not going to get the attention that it deserves. On Monday, we're going to try and play parts of it. I don't know. Maybe we should just run it. Maybe that should be the Monday podcast. I don't know. People should tweet at me about that because I'm really just pissed that people aren't getting a chance to listen to it. At the very least, we're going to do as much of a comprehensive roundup as we can about it. But maybe the idea is just record the damn thing and put it out. F them. I'm really pissed about it. I'm really pissed about it. I mean, it's not a surprise. Like I say, it was arguing about this a couple of months ago when O'Malley made his point. But that is the case. All right, we're going to take a quick break. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number. Of course, you can IM me at on the app. See you on Monday. And for members, see you in just seconds.